Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Leadership Lounge. It's great that you can join us here for September's Leadership Lounge. I have three amazing guests joining us today on the topic of leading change. And we have Trevor Foley, who is the Director for Coaching Services for Linden Learning. We have Kirsty Land, who's the Thrive Director at The Mix in Stowmarket. And Chloe Humphrey, who has the amazing title of being the Director's PA and Office Manager here at Everyday Leader. So welcome, guys. Thank you for joining us today on the Leadership Lounge.
Well, good to be here.
Yeah, it's great. Thank you. So, Trevor, let's start with you, the Director for Coaching Services at Linden Learning. So what does that involve? What do you do?
Well, it involves organising coaching for leaders, basically. But it started out as me being a full-time coach and then finding other people that have found the value of that and then arranging for other people to be able to be coached as well. So as coaching services, that can be group coaching, it can be one-to-one coaching, or it can be facilitation of meetings, and that a fascinating role.
Yeah, great. And thank you for joining us, Trevor. We met a number of years ago in a different context, didn't we? And it was great to work with you then. And it's fantastic to have you back here on the Leadership Lounge, bringing your kind of coaching expertise as part of our conversation today. So Kirsty, you're next on our list, Thrive Director at The Mix. So does that mean you just direct people to thrive? And who do you work with? What does that involve?
So yeah, kind of pretty much. I'd not thought of it like that before. I do support people to thrive. So Thrive is an alternative provision. We support a whole load of local secondary schools. They send their pupils to us one day a week. And we work with them in all sorts of projects. We do vocational work with them. We look at academic support. We run a Leadership for Life course supporting them to lead themselves well going forwards. But yeah, the main aim is, as a team, I support our team to work with young people to help them to thrive in the areas that they weren't thriving in beforehand.
Fantastic. That's great. And as part of that process, of course, you're helping them to journey through change. And so that's exactly why you're here today, yeah, to bring that perspective. So thank you for joining us. And Chloe, I mean, I kind of know what you do because you are my PA. And we were just saying before we all kind of went live, somebody said it's nice to actually meet Chloe. And so people do actually know that you exist. So, but Chloe, tell everyone who's listening kind of what does being a Director's PA and Office Manager at Everyday Leader involve?
So not saying that Colin isn't already a very organised person, but I'd say that I add to that. So I help organise all of his coaching and training bookings. I also help out with social media posts and stuff like that. And yeah, I'm kind of one of the faces behind Colin, helping him out, supporting through that.
Yeah. Brilliant. And it's fantastic to have Chloe as part of the team. She's kind of undersold herself in what she's done. Everything I've given her, she's kind of taken on and done more and more. But one of the reasons that Chloe is here, not just because she's helping Everyday Leader move through periods of change, but actually she's been through a period of change herself too, in terms of where she used to work and where she works now and all that brought. So that is something that Chloe will kind of, I'm sure, explain as part of the process. Okay, so as you know, in the Leadership Lounge, every month we explore a different kind of leadership topic that will help us in leading. And this month we're looking at the really important topic for leaders of leading change. And change can be exhilarating, but change can also perhaps for some be quite scary. There's a lot of routine in our day, and that can often bring comfort and safety. But we also meet change on a regular, if not daily, basis. A different outfit to wear, maybe for some, or maybe not. Maybe you just have the same shirts, a whole row of them that you pick, or the same dress every day, whatever it might be. But maybe there's a different route to work on some days, maybe sitting in a new seat at a coffee shop, or even meeting somebody new for coffee. Choosing change is one thing, of course, what you choose to wear and who you choose to meet. But having it chosen for you can sometimes perhaps be a different matter. So when it comes to leading people through change, where maybe you're the one that's taking them on this journey and they're not necessarily choosing it, what are our top tips? And our job as a leader is about painting a picture of the future. So the core of our job is actually about creating change. And interestingly, people aren't necessarily afraid of change. The job they do, the way that they do it, was at one point a change to something they did before. The issue is often actually about transition to change and how we manage it. And so today we're going to explore that with our guests. And so our first question, just to look into, is what's your personal experience of change. Trevor, how about you? Have you had any personal experience of change?
I would have been very unusual if I hadn't. I think the life is fundamentally just a series of transitions from one thing to another, you know, from when we're younger all the way through to adulthood. Yeah. I'm thinking probably the biggest shock to my system was starting a family. I don't know if anyone else has had that joy, but I was thinking of change as being you having to let go of something, whether it be regular sleep, spontaneity, you know, time out enjoying yourself. And then it's also that bit about embracing something as well. And I think in my life, probably that was the starkest example of letting go of some things that I've become very fond of, but also then embracing the potential for the future. When it comes to things in my professional life, I suppose it's a similar sort of thing. I was a teacher for many years and I was an advisor for many years. And then I was a coach. And the moments where the biggest change happened was probably about 10 years ago. I used to work for the National Strategies, which was the national school improvement agency. As things happened, it ran its course and finished. So then I had to make a choice. What do I do? Do I go back into schools? Do I go back into local authorities? Or do I work independently and see if I can carve my own way? And I would say that was up there as a huge change as well. Suddenly the buck stopped on this desk as opposed to anywhere else. So, yeah, lots of different examples of change, but those two stand out for me.
And what would you say when you, both in terms of maybe home and in the work context, what have you found has helped you manage change or transition then?
Well, certainly in those two, it was imagining the potential of what might be in the future and aiming for that and creating a really compelling vision that I would move towards. And, you know, normally an ambitious and optimistic one. And with variable success, I think. But certainly on the whole, that's worked really well for me, being excited about the future.
Great. So there's a sense then of just visioning in yourself, okay, this might be a challenging transition, but there's some great, amazing potential that can come from
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
Great. So already a beginning of a top tip for if you're experiencing change, how you can manage that. How about you, Kirsty? What's your experience of change been and how have you managed that?
Yeah, I think like we've said, it's very varied, some in my personal life, some in my professional life. I think the thing that I've tried to focus on with change is that the journey is as much part of the adventure as the place you're going to. So we used to live down in Hampshire with our three children. We decided to relocate to Suffolk. Our children were 5, 7, and 9. So that they were at an age when they needed to be part of the journey, but they wouldn't necessarily understand, especially the youngest one, all the details and reasons why. But the journey of relocating a family around jobs and houses and schools, it's wide, isn't it? And it doesn't happen overnight. And I think for me, focusing on the adventure of the journey as well as the adventure of the destination was really key. And I think that's something I'm learning in my professional life. There's always change. I think there's got to be a steady cycle of change. Otherwise, you're not growing and you're not meeting changing needs. And yeah, I do like the comfort of knowing what's happening. And when I don't have that comfort of knowing what's happening, it is about focusing on the journey and the fact that the journey is where I learn and grow, as well as where other people learn and grow.
Yeah, I mean, there's some great wisdom in that already, Kirsty, just in terms of not seeing a destination, but experiencing the journey, being in that moment and seeing what can I learn from this moment? What can I learn about myself? What can I learn about others? What can I learn about the situation? Can be incredibly powerful when you're going through the change. I think that's also really helpful for us as leaders, just to be able to explain change in that way to those that we're leading too. What can we discover about us in this journey too, as a group, as we go through it? So that's great. Thank you, Kirsty. And Chloe, what about you? I hinted earlier that maybe you've been through some change, but that might not be the one you want to talk about. So what's your experience of change and how did you manage that?
Yeah, so I think I've had quite a balance of change that I've brought around myself and change that has been kind of put to me. So a couple of years ago, I moved out to Switzerland to start a job as a PA for a company out there, which was a big enough change. I just finished my A-levels. I've been applying for lots of apprenticeships and whatnot. And I hadn't particularly been looking for anything abroad, but this opportunity came up. And that was a very big step for me. Obviously, I was 18 and I was obviously leaving, living with my parents and going abroad. And obviously just that transition from studying every day and being in that kind of school structure to then being in a workplace was a very different change. It was a legal and accounts firm, so very hard work, a lot of people doing very long hours and very high expectations. So that was a change. But then also, while I was over there, I started doing some HR tasks and they moved me into the HR department. That was a change that I wasn't expecting and I didn't kind of ask for. It was more that I got sat down and they were like, we want to move you to the HR department. There wasn't much of a discussion around it. So it was kind of a, you are going to go into the HR department, which I wasn't expecting. And it was a bit of a shock to the system at first to kind of have a very different role, because all of a sudden I was under a different boss. I had to understand the way that he worked, and he worked in a very different way to the guy that I PA'd for as well. So yeah, I've had some interesting change. And then obviously just at the end of last year, I then moved back to the UK and I now work for Collins. So again, that was a change which I brought upon myself. But that was definitely one of those changes that I had to do to help myself grow, because I'd kind of reached a point of, I'd kind of gained everything from the experience in Switzerland that I could have. So that change was very much one that I brought around to help my own development.
Mm. And so what helped you, Chloe, perhaps particularly with the change that was kind of brought upon you? Was there anything that, that you used to manage that change?
Yeah, I think I'd probably say just trying to get as much information from them of kind of what they were expecting from my new role, so I could understand. They were a bit unclear at first. I wasn't sure whether I was doing that role alongside my PA role still. So it was kind of getting that clear communication and getting that proper understanding of, okay, so now this is what is expected of me. This is what my day-to-day is going to look like. As soon as I kind of had a better idea of that, then obviously it made me feel a bit more relaxed in knowing what I was then going to be doing today.
Yeah, so there's a sense there of gaining some clarity. I mean, Kirsty talked earlier about liking to know, well, what's this look like, where am I getting to? And I think generally people need to know their parameters, don't they? What is my landscape? What should I be doing? And you're saying actually what helped is asking questions to gain that clarity, so you know what was expected of you. That's great. So it's interesting, all three of you, you know, like all of us, have had change, haven't we? And we've managed that change. But for many people, they find that transition going through the change really hard. So what is it about change or transition that we think people find hard? Anybody got any views on that?
Well, almost every conversation I have as a coach is about change. I mean, people arrive and they're either wanting to cope with the change, much like, you know, Chloe, something's happened that you didn't have a choice over, or they're here because they want to provoke change. They want to be the agent in the change. And so much of it, in my experience, when people share with me what is it about that they find difficult, is the lack of predictability, that the unknown unknowns that Bloomsfeld would talk about, and about that bit about knowledge. What do I need to know in order to be confident? What skills do I need to have? What do I need to understand and prepare for? So I think there's a lot in there about being able to see what's ahead of you.
And so is that something, as a coach, Trevor, you ask questions to help them discover the things that they need to know for themselves then to gain that clarity?
Absolutely. Sometimes it's almost like just a sense of anxiety. I don't know. But that's when you ask them about what specifically are they concerned might happen? What are the possibilities that they feel might put them in a position where they don't feel confident? They can pin things down and they can look at it with clear eyes and say, actually, I've got the skills to deal with that. Or even better, I've dealt with something like that in the past and I survived. Mm. One of the things that's really useful, I think, when people start to appreciate what you just said, Colin, that their whole life is a series of changes and transitions. It's something we are brilliant at. Mm. And even if you go into a situation and you already have all the skills that you need, then maybe that change isn't ambitious enough. Maybe you're missing out on an opportunity to develop new ones. So there's a bit of reframing that goes on as well.
Yeah, and I think that understanding, I have dealt with change before is an important aspect of that, isn't it? Because it reminds them they do have the skills to manage the change, but maybe, as you say, they're capable of even more. Kirsty, Chloe, any other thoughts to add to that on why we perhaps think people find the transition or change hard?
I think the situation Chloe's just described, where something is done to you and change is forced on you, I think that can be a whole different set of skills to explore, as opposed to when, as Trevor's just said, when you're instigating change yourself. And I think the fear of the unknown in that situation can be greater than when you are instigating your own change. I think in a situation where change is put on you and it's being done to you rather than necessarily with you and for you, it's about pausing and seeking a bigger perspective and looking at what might come ahead. And as Chloe said, gaining the information that you need to see the hope in the future. It's a very different situation, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I was kind of been reminded working with some people recently around this whole thing around fear. So fear, the acronym they say it could explain it is false expectations appearing real. And quite often in change, when it's being forced on people, it comes again to this conspiracy theory. So we know a bit of information here, we know a bit of information here, and then we fill in the gap. And we say, oh, but this change is going to mean this, and I'm going to get it all wrong, and I'm going to look stupid. And so we begin to create a story in our head, which is all based around the fear that we might be feeling. Yeah. And, you know, what Trevor was talking about just now, that chance to stop. You've talked about the same, Kirsty, pressing pause, just to stop and go, okay, so this is the story I'm telling myself at the moment that this change and transition is going to bring. But could there be a different story? Could there be a different outcome? I know this and I know this, but actually, what could be a different story? And where have I gone through change before? And what did I do then? And what skills do I have to hand to manage this? And coming back again to what Chloe was saying around the questions. Okay, so if I don't know some of this information, who could I ask to find out the information that helped me to write a better story between these two known parameters that I know? So, yeah, I think you're right. It's particularly where change is brought upon us, it can create that sense of fear. And often, you know, our fears end up far worse, don't they? Trevor talked about change in job roles and things. I know for me, my change from being a head teacher was a bit sudden. It came quicker than expected. And immediately you're thinking, oh my goodness, this is all going to go a bit wrong here now. But actually, of course, it never ends up quite as bad as we think it can be. In fact, it often ends up being even better than we were before. So it's just helping ourselves to understand that and kind of, okay, so this change is being forced upon me, but what do I know? What do I need to know? What skills have I got to address this? And as you both said, being able to press that pause is really important.
And sometimes I wonder if it's about having the right people around you to help you gain a different perspective and see the possibilities and the opportunities. I think sometimes you can become very stuck, like you've said, in the story that you're writing for yourself, and you need help to pause and reflect and think differently.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's about a bit of proactive. It's either about, as Trevor and I would both say as coaches, having a coach could be really good for that. But it can be equally about, gathering around you people that you know will, that you can trust to call it on you as well. You know, you don't just want the nice, soft, cuddly friends on this one who'll just go, oh, that's awful, isn't it? You want people to go, okay, just press pause then. What other story could this be? And ask the kind of coaching questions, but as a trusted friend or confidant. So, that's important proactively.
Adding into that, I certainly think that when you've had past experiences of change which have been particularly negative, also having somebody that kind of knows those experiences and then you can talk to through new ones can help put into perspective that it's not going to turn out negatively like the other ones do. I think when you experience a lot of change that comes out in conflict, which I know I personally experienced a bit of in the workplace, you then kind of get this slight fear and uncertainty over change in the future. And you're like, oh, but is this change just going to end up the way that one did? And you kind of, you're like, well, let's just not bother. Let's just not change anything. Because if it's going to end like that, then we're just going to make it worse. And I think having somebody that you can talk to about that, that can kind of help you see it in a different perspective, because you kind of clouded for yourself. And then being able to be like, it's not going to end up like that. You know, if you kind of think about it from this side, and they might help you pick out the positives in a negative situation. I know that I had a lot of colleagues around me that they understood the situation. So they were actually really good to talk to about the changes that I was going through, because they understood where I was coming from, but they were also able to see the positives that came out of the change as well, which maybe I wasn't focusing on.
Yeah, that ability to say, actually, there are other stories, and there is a sense you only know what you know, isn't there? And if all your experience has been, oh, this has all gone badly for people before, for someone to say, oh, but actually, I've also seen this version of what can happen too.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's worth noting as well, of course, many people thrive on change. They seek it out. It's interesting to explore with people, what is it about change that you find exciting? When was the last time you had an experience where you moved from, you know, one context to another and you found it exhilarating and really rewarding, and seeing what was the attitude that you brought with that? I think, Chloe, as you say, that sometimes it's the way that you approach the change that will then play out following the change and through it. So, yeah, it is hard. Change can be hard, but it can also be really rewarding.
Yeah, I love that, Trevor. It's a great coaching approach there, isn't it, that anyone can adopt, which is just saying, yeah, where have I had good experiences of this, and what did I tap into then, and what was it that brought that? And again, that change of mindset then of seeing the potential that comes from it, that's really helpful. So we're understanding a bit about change and what we've been through and some of the challenges of change. We've just heard there that actually it's about our mindset towards change. What is it about leading change that maybe leaders can find hard? What is it about that? We've just talked through really if you're experiencing change, what it can feel like. But what about if you're leading change? Some leaders can find that hard. What is it you think that might sit behind that? Anyone got a view on that?
I think some leaders struggle to understand the balance of kind of how much information to give and when. Obviously, as the person being led through the change, you kind of have this idea of wanting to know all of the information. But leaders also need to find that level of giving enough, but also not giving too much that it then kind of freaks people out. And I think it's finding that balance of information transfer, and whether you do it over a kind of a structured time. If you bombard people with everything, then everybody's mind is going to be at a different pace and a different step of the change process. And if you don't give them enough, then they're going to have a lot of questions buzzing around their heads. And if they're not getting answers to those, then that's just going to create more uncertainty. And so I think it's really important to find that balance. And also for the leader, because obviously sometimes it will be that the leader that's making the change doesn't have all the information themselves. It might be that they're getting information from another source. So they might be in as equally a weird position as those that they're helping lead. So I think it's, yeah, trying to understand that balance can be a really hard thing to do sometimes.
Yeah, that's quite insightful, Chloe. I think those of us who have led through change, there is that dilemma, particularly where it's delicate change or there's confidential elements to parts of the change as well. That can be really hard. Kirsty, Trevor, any other view on what it is about leading change that leaders can find hard?
I think, as Chloe points out, it's lots to do with information and recognising that if you've got a team, however, no matter how small or big it is, there'll be a range of needs, a range of desires in terms of what that looks like. So the kind of, I've given the message in a big meeting and that's it, my job is done, is probably a little bit naive. There'll be personal needs, there'll be emotional needs, practical ones.
Yeah.
You talked about the story that people tell themselves. I think one of the key elements of that is what's my role in this story? And of course, if the context change, if we turn to a different chapter and suddenly things have changed, so what's my role now? And so there is a certain amount of bespoke communication here for this particular person. This is the role, this is what's expected of you, and this is what you can expect as well. So one of the things I think the leaders might find particularly challenging, especially ones that have shared it with me, is being able to identify how can I help these individuals through change, as well as the organisation potentially.
Yeah. So again, there's a real thing there, isn't there, about really knowing your team and understanding them before any change, so that when you come to change, you know how they tick, you know what their needs are, you know their kind of mental and emotional approaches to things, so you can judge that and then work out what do they need as opposed to somebody else.
Yeah.
Yeah, and as you said earlier, Trevor, some people thrive on change and some people find the transition really difficult. So it's just knowing that actually the person that's thriving on change, then, you know, you'll treat them very differently to the one who perhaps is really struggling with the transition. Yeah, great. Okay, so one of the things I've mentioned is actually this kind of transition alongside change. And you might just think, well, is that just semantics? But Patrick Lencioni and some of his work just explains that it isn't change, it's transition. It's because of what you're used to, moving to something new. And so, Trevor, what do you think is the issue? Is the issue transition? And if so, what is the psychology of transition that makes it hard? You got any perspective on that from a coaching perspective?
I have a bit of experience prior to that. When I was with the National Strategies, I was a regional advisor for transfers and transitions of children between schools. So trying to understand how can you support a young person to be able to go through some, for them, an incredibly significant change from going from being the oldest, say, in a primary school to being the youngest in a secondary school and all the changes that go with that. And much of it is the same, this idea of, how do I let go of something but recognize it as something significant in my life? And how do I adapt to something new and accept that change and bring it into my life, embrace the potential of changing things? There's loads there about information and all of that. But one of the things that really struck me, part of my job was to go around primary schools and talk to the youngsters. So, you know, what are you expecting? How have you been prepared? What have you, how have you been reassured by, you know, have you been up to see the, or been to see the school? And I was talking to a young lady in a year six class. This was in Hampshire, I think. And she spoke all the different things. We'd had these visits and we'd had these talks and a little booklet and parents. She said the thing that made a really big difference for her was that when the man from the secondary school visited, it was clear that he was a good friend of Mrs. Begum, who was her past teacher. And the fact that they were friends and that they clearly got on was really important to them. So there's something about having trust in the people organizing it, that they have your interests at heart, that they know what they're doing, that they're working together in order to make it a journey. So what you observe around you, I think, is a big part of this psychology, because we all rely on other people, and where we feel we can, then that's going to bolster our confidence as well.
Mm. So there's perhaps an important thing there for us as leaders, just in terms of the psychology of safety, and that actually if you as a leader are helping people to feel safe as part of this process or transition, even if actually the transition is going to be difficult, understanding the people around me I can trust is important as part of that movement. And I guess what you're talking about there is also how you work with the wider group as well. If people are looking around to see how's the wider group experiencing this, that again is going to be quite an important part.
I think you're absolutely right. And come back to, I think it was Rumsfeld, wasn't it, that said the unknown unknowns. And this is a big part of this, and especially with young children. But also with anyone moving in. I used to train NQTs in East London. And of course, they're going and they're really excited about going into their new role and possibly their first job. And one of the questions I used to invite them to ask themselves is, what do I do when I don't know what to do? Am I prepared for the inevitability of being in a situation where actually I haven't got experience to draw upon? What am I going to do at that point? What are my priorities in this point? Where do I get the information, as Chloe said? What are the parameters, as you said earlier on, Colin, what are the parameters that I'm working within? How do I remain resourceful and responsive in light of the fact that I'm really learning as I go now? And if we can equip people with permission to go through that and support them through that, then they'll approach it with more confidence.
Yeah. So you're talking there about an element of helping people to pre-mortem. Imagine what, if it doesn't quite feel safe or I don't know quite what I'm doing, what could I do? And giving them permission to do that, again, is really, really important. Thank you. Kirsty, in your experience of change and in leading change, what do you see as important to consider in transition?
I think there's a really big piece of work that all of us leaders need to do when we're leading change around vision and why. If people can understand the why, the purpose of the journey that you're taking them on, they are automatically going to feel like the change is being done with them and not to them. And as leaders, unless there's a crisis and change is sudden, we always have the opportunity to build the journey and the transition, the purpose, the why, into the work that we're doing. And as Trevor's already said, there's a massive need to understand the different needs of the people in our team. I certainly feel as a leader, sometimes I need to be that step ahead of my team, and I need to be explaining the vision and the purpose and where we're going and why and what people's roles are. But other times I'm jogging, not literally, because although Colin likes that, it's not my thing. I'm jogging around to the back of the group and I'm walking with the people who are struggling to get their head around it and not quite understanding where they fit in the journey. So there's a real need for leadership fitness, being able to helicopter above what's going on, see everything that's happening, work out who needs what and how you can support them on that transition. And I think that's really key. And in the work that I do, it's not just around supporting the team that I work with, but just like you've said, Trevor, we support students with transition, but ours is more the 16-year-olds into their next steps. And sometimes the work that we're doing with them is around education or work employability, but sometimes it's around independent living and safety. We do a lot of work with our young people around safeguarding and how they can move themselves into a place on a journey where they are safer than they were before. And that's a very interesting area to experience. And it's about walking alongside a young person to help them develop the skills so they can then take off and thrive without you. And for the staff team, it's about knowing how much of that journey, how much of that transition you need to be next to them on, and at which point they can be released and fly and manage that themselves.
Yeah, so there's lots of richness of thinking there, Kirsty, and particularly this whole thing about helping them understand the purpose or the reason why. You know, people buy into a why, they don't buy into a what. And if they understand the reason we're bringing this change, I think the other really important bit linked to that, and it goes back to what we were saying earlier about knowing your team and understanding them and what they need, is understanding how their why, their purpose, what they're into, links to the purpose or reason for this change. And like a good Venn diagram, finding that intersection between the two so that you explain the change in terms that really connects with what drives and impassions them. So I think, yeah, there's a really important top tip for us as leaders there. We're thinking about the change, be really clear on the reason that sits behind it and how we connect that to what drives them. And I also loved your explanation about sometimes you need to be at the back and working with those who are struggling, and sometimes you're just getting an oversight and you're just sensing that temperature of the transition. Who's making the transition? Who's struggling with it? And just trying to gauge that and respond to that and be dexterous in your response. Again, I think it's really important for us as leaders. Chloe, you mentioned earlier you went through a big transition of moving for Switzerland, and then you moved back again. So you moved from a large company to a small one. I mean, what helps with transition then? And what do you think leaders need to consider then if they're bringing the transition on others?
I think it's providing that time to adjust, both kind of in a practical sense and a mental sense. I think, obviously, my change of going from Switzerland to the UK, and obviously from a large company to a smaller one, it's understanding that change in management styles and kind of working styles that comes along with that. Obviously, from a PA position, really understanding the person that you're working with. Obviously, I've worked with Colin, I worked with two very different bosses in Switzerland as well. They all have their very own ways that they like things done. And it's about taking the time to understand that so you can kind of get the most out of that working relationship. I think one of the best things that kind of leaders can do is have meetings with people, give them that opportunity to talk and to kind of give recommendations, understand each other and properly find that level of connection. And I think that makes the transition into a new job a whole lot easier when you kind of understand each other's standards and what you're both looking for out of the job kind of expectations. As soon as you're clear on that, then I think it helps both practically, and you can know in your head that, you know, you're settled and you know what you're doing.
Yeah, that's really great. And there's two key things I'm picking out of that is around time and exploration. So giving the person time, if you're leading them through change, giving them time to understand what that looks like and a bit of space. And then you've talked about this exploration of just kind of exploring with the person what this is going to look like, what the expectations are, what this new role will look like. It pulls out on a number of things we've talked about already and just helping the person to gain clarity around what this new way of doing things might be expected.
The time part is especially key because obviously you'll have people that come out, as Trevor said earlier, if you've given a huge meeting and told everybody about the change, you'll have the people that have questions instantly, and then you'll have the people that need to take some time, think about it. It might be a day, it might be a week. And then they'll suddenly be like, oh, wait, so if this is happening, what about this, this, and this? And it'll take them a bit of time to kind of adjust to the thought of it and kind of have all of those initial thoughts come into their head. And then obviously, if you've gone, oh, yeah, job's done, you've answered the questions that have come to you straight after the meeting. If you're not expecting anybody else to have any questions later in the week, you might have just moved on from the whole thing. But it's understanding that some people are going to need to take that time to think it all over, then come up with their questions. I know for myself, I'm one of those people that likes to definitely think about what it is that I'm trying to say before I say it. So I might not be one of the people to sit in a meeting and instantly be able to come up with responses to everything, because I like to make sure that the way I'm portraying my response is in the correct way. And so for me, that's something that I have to kind of be able to mull over. I'd much rather have time to think about it and to come up with my suggestions and then have another meeting to be able to then put that forward. So
yeah. Yeah, that's great. And as you're describing that there, I'm just mindful of, you know, your introvert and your extrovert, and your extrovert will be the one that asks the question straight away because that's the way they process things, by talking it through with others. And the introvert needs time to think that through. That's their way of processing. And as leaders, we need to be aware again of our staff and the way they operate. And so I'm now even clearer by doing this podcast on the way Chloe likes to operate as well, just to be able to know, actually, that person needs time to process. That one talks it through straight away, and just being, you know, not missing out on some of those that need some of that thinking time. One of the best tools that I've found for helping people through change is Noster's model of complex change. And in fact, if you want to look afterwards, we'll put a link in the podcast notes to seeing this on our website online, so you can see the visual version of this. Now, on this, he says there are some key elements that you need for successful change. He says you need vision, so a real clear vision, and everyone to be clear on what that is. So that brings up what Kirsty was saying earlier around the purpose and the why as well. People need the skills or need to think they have the skills. You need the right incentives for people that they kind of can buy into, that work for them. And it isn't just about giving them more money for change. It's just about that they understand what's in it for them. That you need the resources to make that change happen, and you need a really clear action plan. So, Kirsty, let's start with vision. It's interesting, you mentioned earlier, didn't you, around purpose. And Noster says that when we don't have a vision and people aren't clear on it, it ends with confusion. So how important is vision, and how do we avoid confusion?
Vision is key. I don't know how somebody or why somebody would want to work in a team where they didn't know where they were going. Being able to see what is ahead and believe in what is ahead and understand why that's the direction that you're going in has got to be key. I mean, I come from an education background. I'm a secondary school teacher in my past. And the fact that schools always start the beginning of an academic year with PD days, those professional development days, where the vision is reshared, any changes and the reasons why are hopefully successfully reshared, to enable staff to have that buy-in again at the beginning of an academic year, it's really key. And it's interesting, actually, in the staff team that I lead at The Mix, I do exactly the same. We start each term with that re-envisioning. But part of that for me is working with a team. It can't just be my vision. I'm one person in a team of 10. It's got to be a shared vision and a shared purpose. And as you said earlier, Colin, it's got to be about the why of what we do mixing together with the why of the people. Actually, I know what my core purpose is as an individual. I know what it is that I want out of a job and out of the charity that I'm working as part of. And other people need to know their personal why, as well as the why of the vision and the journey that they're part of. And it's when those two merge together that people find their sweet spot, yeah. and that the vision becomes a purpose that you want to be part of.
Yeah, yeah. And I think there's a thing, isn't about, you talked about re-envisaging. It's so hard to say re-envisaging, isn't it? But it's about revisiting that on a regular basis and just reminding yourself, this is the reason why we're going through this. And so it's not just seen as this mundane activity, but actually we're going through this for a reason. It's to make things better for, and should ideally be for those that you are serving as part of your organisation. So in your case, that's for, you know, supporting young people. For them, for their next stage of their journey, and for them to be, you know, engaging in education if they're not at that 16-year-old level yet, where they're thinking about the next stage. Yeah. So, Trevor, I'm also intrigued by Nosta's second one, which is around skills and the skills element. And in my experience as a coach and as a head teacher, it is all about either they don't have the skills or they don't think they have them, even though they actually do have them. I mean, how do we go about, when we're leading people, addressing those two versions, the one that doesn't have the skills to manage the change, but the one that does but just doesn't realise they do?
I suppose one of the things is that, much like you said, people will sometimes leap to the conclusion they don't have the skills, or that there is one set of skills that is necessary. And of course, there are many ways of approaching things, and a whole different sorts of sets of skills. I worked with a deputy head teacher who then moved to be the head teacher of the school. And the previous head teacher, incredibly charismatic, fantastic orator, inspirational speaker, and working with the now head, but as deputy head, she said, that's not how I work. It's never been how I work. And she identified a whole new set of skills that was far more emotionally kind of literate, I would say. But also it was just this bit about deliberately taking the spotlight off her. She had a real skill of being able to give people the confidence to be able to take the spotlight and bring the team into being co-visioners, co-creators and designers of not only the process of change, but where we're going. So first thing is, it might not be the set of skills that you think are necessary. Think of other ones as well. Where you were saying, Kirsty, I think about the vision actually sets the direction, doesn't it? It sets a kind of a sense of purpose, a compelling reason to engage with it. And I think when we get to Nosta's skills, I'm going to broaden that out into kind of knowledge, understanding and skills. And where that's lacking, that's where you get anxiety, where you get hesitancy. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you want someone to approach something to get the best chance of success, you want to approach it wholeheartedly. But I'm also just going to link it, because I think it's really important with what Nosta's kind of called resources. But again, I'll expand that out again into systems, structures and resources. Are the systems and structures fit for purpose? This is a real responsibility for leaders to say, OK, so the our context is changing. Have our processes changed along with those to give people the very best chance of being able to be successful within that? And if you put knowledge, understanding and skills alongside systems, structures and resources that are fit for purpose, you get capability. And if you've got that, then you're going to get a real sense of confidence. And really importantly, you're going to get some quick wins. People are going to notice the change quite quickly. And if they can do that, then that encourages them to be even more creative, especially if they feel that they're part of the journey.
Yeah.
In terms of being a coach, one of the ways that I might approach this is something I call a context resource map across. I've got to think of a more kind of pithy title for it, because I remember it. And it's reminding people or asking people to explore similar-ish situations where they've already been successful. And most of my examples come from schools because I work primarily with head teachers and school leaders. And I can remember one school leader that was having some troubled times with a colleague. They found that they were responding emotionally. They felt nervous around this colleague. They felt personally affronted at times, and this was really impeding their relationship. And yet they identified that the same sorts of behaviors from a parent coming in school didn't affect them in that way. They remained purposeful, focused, professional. They remained in charge of all those resources and skills that they have. And so by reminding themselves and taking that approach and that attitude from one context and then putting it into another, they were able to shape the way they responded and be both in a professional, calm, but assertive way, improve that relationship with a direct aim at what was what they were trying to achieve rather than how they felt in the moment.
Mm. Yeah, that's great. Thank you, Trevor. So you've expanded beyond the skills as well, pulling that all together. So if you're a leader thinking about planning this change, and this is, again, one of the brilliant things about NOSTA, Trevor explains, yeah, actually, you get anxiety if people don't feel they've got those skills linked to it. And that's what NOSTA explains. If you start to see things like anxiety in people, it's because they feel they don't have the skills. But as Trevor said, helping them to see the skills that they can bring and discover that. But again, if you're thinking about planning as a leader, as Trevor said, just think wide. Have I got the systems alongside these resources in order to help people in that approach? It's absolutely key when you're planning that change as part of that process. Chloe, I know you're very organized. It'd be interesting just to explore one of his NOSTA's other elements, which is around that planning and action planning. Is action planning something you do? And if so, what's your advice for people leading others and ensuring people are clear on the plan? This is where you say, no, I don't action plan at all, Colin. So
what are you talking about? I think we've spoken already a lot about communication, but I think the best communication comes from when there's a clear set plan. Not only so the person communicating it has a clear way of explaining what plan of the change is, but also so everybody that's about to go through that change can also see what's going to happen, when it's going to happen, if they're involved in the change, what's going to be expected of them and when. And I think once you've kind of got that clearer plan of it, it's a lot easier for everybody to kind of get on board, and you remove that level of uncertainty that we discussed earlier. And I think, I mean, I know that Colin loves a Gantt chart. So, I mean, that's like one way of doing it. But it's coming up with those types of timescale resources. And as soon as you've kind of got one of those in place, I think it makes the process a whole lot easier.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, NOSTA says actually, if people will feel like it's a treadmill because they don't know where it's going. So having that step plan again is really important. You mentioned one of my things. I've got this reputation now for liking Gantt charts just because I produce some for a particular group. But it is of just about mapping who's doing what by when and when are things going to happen. Again, it gives that, we were talking earlier about this sense of security, isn't it? If people know, okay, so this is what's going to happen, and then this is what it'll look like then, and this is what we need to have ready then.
I think there's a really important element here about the organisation, isn't there, Colin? And Chloe, you bring that out, that having the information so I know where I fit into this, into the bigger picture, but also having real clarity that leaders share with them, these are the bits that we need to apply consistently. These are the bits that I am asking you, please be consistent in these areas. But this is the area where you can get creative. This is where I want you to explore the potential of this new reality. And where's that line? And by sharing, you know, whether it be a Gantt chart, whether it be a plan, and whether it be, you know, a series of Venn diagrams, anything that helps people get a clarity of saying, right, that I'm going to stick to, but here I can have some fun and explore. You get a whole team in an organization getting that, and you've got a machine for generating full potential. And sure, it'll go down routes that sometimes think, okay, that was a dead end. Never mind, we'll explore this one. So organization and communication is so important to allow that.
Mm, yeah. And again, one of the things is understanding people as part of that process, involving them in that change, isn't it? And one of the other ones that's, again, really important in NOSTA's thing is this sense of incentive. About 2.5 years ago, I was diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. I was seriously overweight and I'd resisted really doing anything about my weight. I just came up with an excuse for it. But that diagnosis was a big enough reason for me to drive change in myself. And within a year, I've lost 5 stone. I'm still on the journey. I still want to lose a bit more. But that was the reason for change, was bigger than my reason not to change. And I think that, again, is really important. Reason for change being bigger than your reason not to. And therefore, understanding that when leading a team, you see resistance, which is one of the indicators that the incentive isn't quite right for people, is really helpful to see that, okay, so I just need to get a better incentive to help them understand why they need to be part of this change. So Trevor, I just wonder, how do we then understand and develop incentive for people when leading them. Any tips for us on that one?
Well, it starts with recognizing that everyone's an individual and considering the question, what do they value? And we've got, if you think about values, you've got ethical values, ethical imperatives that we drive towards in schools. You know, people are incredibly driven. I mean, through the last 18 months, I have been in awe of the way that schools have continued to focus on what is best for these young people that we're supporting. Mm. So you've got that. That can be incredibly incentivizing. There's also personal ones. We're all human. We will have things that we want as well. And that's okay, because addressing our own needs is important as well. And that might be financial. There are financial imperatives, but it might be social. It might be psychological. It might be emotional. And taking time to understand what's going to incentivize individuals is important. And also the interplay between whether it's a towards motivation, I want to get this, or whether it's an away from, I want to avoid this. And there's always a little bit of an interplay. I've just been on holiday, which I was mentioning before we came on air. And, some of the time I was thinking, oh, I can't wait to get away. We went down to Bournemouth. It's beautiful scenery, and I love long walks and a little bit of spending time with the family. But there was also part of me that was incentivized to go on holiday to get away from the alarm clock and the deadlines and following up on emails and all of that. And so as a leader, let's reflect on all aspects of this. It's okay that people have individual personal needs. Mm. So identify what matters to people, align your message with their values, and provide a really solid rationale for it so it makes sense to them. And if you can, provide evidence where it's worked elsewhere so that they've got a sense of hope in that. Inquire about their concerns. What are the things that they're worried about? Check for misconceptions. Consider the real world impact on their real world, not yours, because it's really easy as a leader, isn't it, to kind of get a sense, I know where it's going to affect me. Mm. How does it affect the person that actually might just mean, well, they have to walk from one length of the building to the other five times a day. Maybe that isn't something that their real world is going to be comfortable. So give people a compelling reason to want to change and a good reason for feeling optimistic that it's going to be successful. And they're going to be a successful element within that.
Yeah. Some really rich ones. If people are listening to this, or, you know, while they're going for a run or something, you might want to replay it later, get your notepad out for some of the key pointers that Trevor has raised there. And I think one of the key things that, as I'm listening to the top tips from Trevor, that there's a real thing there about listening to understand people, isn't it? Understand what are their issues. Stephen Covey talks about one of the seven habits of a highly effective person, listen to understand. And when you really listen, so what is it for you? And as you say, Trevor, understanding, are there some negative drivers there for them, or positive drivers, or both? And being able to work with those with people is really important. So thank you. Our time is running away with us. So just before, in a moment, we're going to come to our kind of top tips. But I just wonder, before we come to your top tips, just this last question, thinking about how any of you have responded, maybe when people you're leading or working with find change hard. What helps when it's a series of factors that maybe people are finding difficult? Any top tips about how you've responded when people have found that change hard? And here's the moment of lull, the moment of quiet. Oh, gosh, that's a big question coming around at the end.
I'll just pick up with something that you said earlier, Colin, if that's okay, and that bit about listening. And one of the most influential things we can do as a leader is listen. It's so tempting to talk. And we're all kind of, you know, can fall into that trap. And it's listening, obviously, to understand someone's world perspective, and then finding, well, how can I support this person to be able to hear the sorts of things that are going to continue to make them feel compelled, making them a co-designer in it. And part of that is being really alert to being able to reward them with a sense that it's being successful. So listen to them and then feedback any successes, any quick wins. And this means paying attention, because it might be that you're making a change for some big, big, huge aspiration, but it might be that you just notice a small change. Feed it back really immediately. Mm. Second thing, give them credit for that change. This is, you know, you've made this change. What you've done has made this change, and we're already making successful impact on whatever we're trying to achieve. Thirdly, recognize the fact that they almost certainly sacrifice something or put effort in. It cost them something. So recognize that and say thank you. I think if we could feedback that there's been a successful change, even how small, give them credit, recognize that they had to do something and put some effort into it, and then show our appreciation. I think that would be my top tip.
Yeah, some great wisdom there. Again, if you're on the run and you're going to have to press pause and play back on that one and write that down in your notepad when leading change. Some really great bits there, Trevor, just around that, yeah, that listening, that responding, that acknowledging, that thanking, attributing, you know, all of those key things. And there's a sense there, you just journey with them in the change, don't you? You just come alongside them. Kirsty talked about that. Sometimes you have to go to the back and just walk alongside at the back with them and just say, okay, what's the struggle here? Let's talk it through. Create that safety as leaders with them as they go through that. That's really
And maybe
helpful.
Exploring as well what it actually feels like to be outside of your comfort zone. You know, we all go through seasons or times within a season where we do feel uncomfortable because we're being stretched, because change is happening, maybe because we don't understand why it's happening. But doing some explicit work with people around what being outside of your comfort zone feels like and why it feels like that and how you can manage yourself in that. I feel we prioritise doing that with our children. We prioritise doing that certainly in my role, and I'm sure in some of your roles, with the young people that we work with. But sometimes I think we overlook doing that particular piece of work with our team and exploring. You know, I'm going back to work in September. About 50% of my staff team has changed. That's really exciting for me. I loved my previous staff team. They've moved on to different things for good reasons. We've got great people coming in. I'm excited. Not all of my team will be. Some of them will find that change hard. Are we actually exploring what it feels like to be outside of our comfort zone and how we can learn to manage and lead ourselves within that? And I think there's a really big discussion there for us to have with our teams about what that looks like and how we can grow in that time.
Yeah, great. Thank you. Another good reminder there, Kirsty, about just doing it with your team, isn't it? Exploring that. And if they're finding that is out of their comfort zone, it's finding little ways that they can just move into that little step at a time that brings comfort. And it is about, again, listening to your team, journeying with your team is really important in leading them through change. Fantastic. So as we said, time flies when you're having fun. It's run away with us on the Leadership Lounge. So we come to that point where we end all of our Leadership Lounges with your top tips to try and summarize all the wisdom that you either brought into this or that you've learned from this conversation as we've kind of sharpened one another with each other's thinking. Maybe it's a top tip you came armed ready to share. Maybe it's something you've discovered during the session. But what is your top tip for leaders in leading change? And I'm going to ask Chloe first, then Kirsty, then Trevor. So Trevor's thinking, great, I've got more thinking time. Chloe's thinking, oh, Colin, why have you made me go first? I've got less thinking time. But Chloe, what is it for you? What would be the top tip you would share with our listeners?
I think I would go for the importance of understanding who it is that you're leading through the change, understanding how you need to communicate with them, whether you've got that kind of honesty and trust in your working relationship with them, because I think once you have those two key things, it makes it a whole lot easier and it's less likely to end in conflict. When in my personal experience, a lot of change that's ended up creating a lot of conflict has come from a lack of trust and a lack of honesty. So once you've got those two things to begin with, you've got that understanding of how the people work that you work with, what makes them tick, then you can kind of understand how to lead that change, understand the what, how and why, and you can properly communicate that.
Yeah, great. Thank you. Top tip, get to know that team. And of course, you can do that now. Even if you're not taking people through change, you can spend that time preparing, getting to know people, which is great leadership anyway, isn't it? Kirsty, what is it for you? What's your top tip? Or has Chloe just nicked it?
No, she hasn't, thankfully. I think mine is probably the word journey, which is knowing that change is a journey. It isn't overnight. Understanding that the journey is important and is as important as the destination. So embracing that and making sure it's a journey that you take people on, that that you're not expecting them to trail behind you, but that you are doing that element of you're leading the way, you're leading the vision, you're in front of them, but you're also walking through it with them. Yeah. I think the journey for me is really, really key.
Great. Thank you. Really great reminder. Enjoy the journey of transition with people as much as the destination. Great. And Trevor, how about you? You've had most of the thinking time. So what's your top tip?
Oh, there's so much there that people have shared today, isn't there? Because I'm building on that sense of journey, that to remind yourself as a leader that you're experiencing that change process as well, and to give yourself permission to be able to navigate the messiness of it. It can get messy change, and there are going to be things that happen that you can't plan for with all the very best intentions. And then remaining really clear on what are you aiming to achieve through this? What's the priority? And how can you learn as you go as well and model that? If you make a mistake as a leader, you're modeling that's okay. Mm. If you embrace that and share, and you share with people and you say, yeah, there are things that I'm going to do differently. And that's what we're all doing together, because we all have, as Kirsty said, that common vision, that shared responsibility to achieve something really worthwhile. Yeah, absolutely.
Great. Again, a lot of rich ideas within that. Just thinking about you as leader, being kind yourself, being reflective on that journey too. So thank you. Well, thank you to my guests. Thank you, Kirsty, Trevor and Chloe, for your wise words of wisdom around this concept of change and managing and leading change, and particularly around transition as we've explored today. It's been great to share that with you. Thank you, those of you who've been listening or watching to our Leadership Lounge podcast. Thank you for joining us, and we look forward to you joining us again next month in the Leadership Lounge. Thank you, everyone.